Well, good morning, everybody. Welcome to the WPTF Weekend Gardener. Mike Riley here, and welcome. It's such a beautiful morning. Boy, this sounds weird. What's you sure I'm on mic?
Are you sure you are Mike? You are Mike.
I hear you fine. I don't hear me worth a hoot, but that's okay. I sound okay to you, Jason? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's just weird. All right, this incredible morning, Paul McKenzie's with us, now retired extension agent. Are you enjoying retirement?
A little bit, yeah, just a little bit.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, taking care of, you know, all the deferred maintenance projects that I haven't had time for around the house.
Well, my problem is I don't know how to do any of that stuff.
Well,
I don't have any, the patience nor the skill. Yep. Set.
Well, that's why you hire people.
Yeah, but still, that kind of cuts. I mean, then what do you do in retirement if you know how to do anything? Yeah, that's my problem.
Watch other people work.
Oh, that's why I have a Palmer.
Yeah.
And my speed dial.
But that's why you're also working. I mean, that's why you're also continuing to practice law.
Well, he did a cement job the other day that I never dreamed. I said, Palmer, I've got a cracked walkway into the house. I'll fix that.
Yeah. Did he patch it? Amazing.
He patched it beautifully.
It's amazing what you can do with cement.
Crete.
Yeah, and I don't know. Some of it is not concrete. It's made of other things. And I don't know how that works because you got two different materials and they don't always expand and contract at the same rate. So...
Well, I walked on it this morning. I still got my shoes on. It didn't lodge in it.
It didn't crack.
No, it didn't smudge down in there.
Good.
And I,
good. Did you write your name in it?
Yeah, I put RLE plus LE.
Excuse me. You put what?
RLE plus LE. Rufus.
Oh, okay.
Edmison plus.
Do you have that on a tree? Is there a tree somewhere?
Oh, the big holly, over 100-year-old holly. It's sort of grown together.
Oh. How about that?
I guess that's prophetic, growing together.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Interesting. Well, you never know what's going to go on out there at the Edmonston Estate.
The home of the evergreen Vietnam.
Well, Nelson says it's not.
Yeah, well, I know she is contradicted on that by none other than the director of the J.C. Ralston Arboretum.
Well, they're both good gardeners.
So wonder who could be impartial arbiter.
I've got that's one.
A beautiful, beautiful hydrangea.
Isn't it beautiful? It's different colors. I wish I need to share this. It's pink and purple and blue.
Hydrangea.
Yeah. Well, all the same hydrangea.
Mm-hmm. Gorgeous.
That's such a wonderful plant.
Yeah. It is. And I just planted another one yesterday.
That's one of those plants that has stood the test of time.
And expanded.
Yeah.
There is one in Cary beside Serendipity. It's not on their property. I think it's on the property next door. Serendipity is a little restaurant on Chatham Street in Cary. the sandwiches and all that kind of stuff. But it's the prettiest lace leaf year after year. And, you know, the lace leaf type isn't always as pretty to me.
Right.
But this is gorgeous.
Yeah.
It's white, blue. And I wish I had taken a photo of it the other day. We were eating outside.
Well, that old-fashioned hydrangea that you, like you've got there, my grandmother had one, you know, at the homestead in Salemburg.
Yeah.
And my dad took a cutting and had it at the house in Greensboro. And then my sister got a cutting and she got one growing it at her house.
How about that? Southwood. So. I know somebody went to... I know somebody who went to Southwood College, which was there.
In Salemburg?
Salemburg.
Oh, absolutely.
And, I mean, for up until, I don't know if it closed sometime in the 70s and law enforcement took it over.
I took it over as Attorney General.
Oh, okay.
In about 1975.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's a training area now for law enforcement, quite a campus.
Mm. Yeah.
And just a beautiful place with old buildings, very sturdy, built back in the 20s and 30s.
Uh-huh.
Southwood, yes, absolutely. And they've got one little eatery there in Salem, Salemburg.
Is it in Bladen or Sampson County?
Sampson County,
yeah. Okay.
I don't think that town has changed much in the last
20
years.
No, I'm sure it hasn't. Yeah. Yeah. But at any rate, that's way off subject. But your grandmother had, I wonder if those hydrangeas are still there. Is the house still there?
It is.
Okay.
At least last time I was through there, someone had bought it and had a plaque on the, you know, it's an old house.
Well, you know, I see in my walking, I see that there's a house. I saw a house the other day that the whole front of the house, right up against the house, foundation plants are the old-fashioned type hydrangeas, which I'm not sure why they did that, because except in the summer, it's not going to look very good.
Right.
Yeah. But that's something like yours, Mike.
Yeah. It looks like it's something. It's amazing the soil. If you had a soil test, I need to get a soil test just of that area, because it has so many different colors on this hydrangea.
Well, I'm asked so often, I'm sure Paul can tell us, how to change the colors. Now, you put acid if you want blues, and you put lime if you want pink and whites, but for some hydrangeas, it won't work. I've tried it on oak leaf. They won't work. They don't change.
Right.
What does it take to change one with a little added fertilizer in the fall of the year?
Well, you know, I mean, maybe we need Phil or Nelson to call in, I don't know. You know, changing the soil pH is a very slow process. Even when you add lime to raise the soil pH, add sulfur to lower the pH. But it's not like, you know, you can apply that in the spring and impact the flower color that year.
So it took me about 6 years.
It's going to be a slow process. Lime, you know, and this is why it's so important to get a soil sample before you plant anything, because if your pH is not correct, it's really difficult to correct it after everything's installed. Because when you apply lime to the soil surface, it moves down, but it moves down very, very slowly over a period of months or years.
Acid soil makes blue.
Right.
Then a little less acid, you start getting into purple. And then alkaline soils, which we don't have a lot of around here, you really have to add a lot of lime to make the pink.
Right.
And kind of ready, I guess. When we were out at the farmer's market, John... who owns a nursery and sells for as long as I can remember out at the farmer's market, gave us plants to give away, hydrangeas, a beautiful pink hydrangeas, and gave that away. But I went down and bought one from him because it was so pretty. And that one, he said, he told you, cannot change color.
Right.
It's a definite pink. Mm. So and it's an endless summer, so it will rebloom.
I think it's a pretty good rule of thumb. When you buy it and it's blooming, it's going to pretty well stay that way unless you work and work at it. I've turned a pure white one into pink over the years. Mm. And the thing about hydrangeas is there's such a variety. Mm-hmm. It's incredible. I think a lot of people, when they get huge, 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 I almost think that they, some people get the snowball. I call it the snowball.
Yeah, it's the old-fashioned French hydrangea,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. And verbena, though, not verbena, but viburnum.
Yeah, there is a snowball. Oh, you're talking about a different plant.
Yeah,
I think it is a snowball.
They get that confused.
Chinese viburnum. Mm-hmm.
And you go to up in western North Carolina to old family cemeteries, you'll find the old-fashioned viburnum in the corner of almost every family cemetery.
Mm. Huh.
But a lot of people think that's a hydrangea.
Mm. Yeah, it's not. Definitely
now,
there not.
There are hydrangeas that will grow that tall and that big. I've got a couple there that are over 75 years old, and I keep cutting them to the ground. And they keep refurbishing.
Yeah, I wonder if any of those Chinese viburnums that have the big balls, the big flowers that are something other than white. I mean, it's very striking.
Yeah.
Because they're really big and they really show up.
Maybe somebody will tell us.
Yeah. They're smaller varieties and small ones that have smaller balls, but yeah, I don't know. I've never seen any, but I mean, you can satisfy yourself with hydrangeas if that's what you want, and if you want, again, if you want to have blue, then you need to have a acid soil. Alkaline soil is pink,
right. You know,
and that means the pH is higher too.
I mean, everybody wants color in the landscape, right? And I think flowering shrubs are underutilized for that. You know,
yeah.
People think of shrubbery and they think about boxwoods and ligustrums, and you know, they're fine in their place.
And hollies.
But there's so much that we can do in our landscapes with flowering shrubs, and there is endless variety of flowering shrubs.
I know, and for year-round use.
All different colors, all year-round. And you think about adding color to your landscape with a shrub versus, you know, an annual flower or a perennial bed, and the amount of maintenance that's going to be required, it's way less. So you get a lot of bang for your buck with flowering shrubs. And they also most of them tend to have kind of a long blooming season.
One that I think it's underused that I always wait for. it's the only thing that's blooms sooner than the Prunus lumae. Quince.
Mm-hmm.
They got a lot of different colors of quince now. I've got a pink one. I've got a white one. I've got a salmon-colored one.
Yeah, I've seen a hedge. I've seen a 100-yard hedge of quince.
Oh, my goodness.
Before in Red Oak.
Wow.
Ooh.
North of Nashville. I remember seeing that a long time ago. All right, 919-860-9783, 919-860-WPTF. You're listening to The Weekend Gardener on WPTF, and it sure doesn't seem like June 1st. The weather is just too perfect this morning. Some people like it warmer. I think it feels marvelous out there.
At 6 o'clock, okay. It marveled how marvelous it was.
Yeah. Well, we'll be back. I promise we'll be back.
All right.
We'll be back. We're back on WPTF, and we have Craig LaHoulier with us. Craig, I apologize. We're sitting here ensconced in this hydrangea stuff, and we should be talking about tomatoes. And I know Rufus started frothing at the mouth when I mentioned tomatoes. Right, Rufus?
Absolutely. And Craig, let me tell you about your seeds you sent me. Yep. I gave them to our friend Gerald Adams, and he's going to take them all the way through this year. And oh, cool. I will start the seeds next year, and we don't know what we're going to have, but you said that you had looked up the name Rufus, and it meant red in Latin. So it's got to be red.
It's one of them's red with gold stripes, and one of them's red with yellow swirls. So they're both going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds regal. With gold stripes.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, there you go. And well, you know, while I was listening to you guys, I was making
wondering why we weren't going to you. I know.
Number one, my wife has anointed me the world's worst homeowner because I am also not the least bit mechanically inclined nor interested in doing home improvements. So there's that. But I can garden like a son of a gun. The second is I waved at you guys because we were in Ocracoke for a week last week, and
Did you toot the horn?
Yes, yeah. I tooted the horn.
Good.
We forgot what an amazing place that is. We used to go all the time when we lived in Raleigh, and now it is a little bit longer, but we had a total week of heaven. But we're very surprised at the damage that Dorian did, that you can still see all the changes that it made. So
it's just a different kind of person who can live out there, for one thing, year-round. It's a wonderful place to visit, but good gracious.
Yep.
If I had to think about I remember years ago someone interviewing a lady who was born there and has lived there all her life, and she going through all these hurricanes with her, you know, looking down and nothing but ocean around her house almost during flooding. And that is a scary, scary thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we couldn't do it because of that, and also just the density of the people. So we usually do Thanksgiving there because all of the tourists have pretty much emptied out. But when you get golf cart versus bike versus pedestrian versus vehicle on those tiny little roads.
Oh, I know.
You need a lot of patience.
Yeah, I haven't been to Ocracoke in a long time, and the coast is terribly crowded. Now with houses and people and traffic, the traffic is unbelievable along 17 and along the Outer Banks. Incredible.
We bring our two kayaks, and our goal is to try to get out and paddle in the estuaries every day, and we managed to do a lot of that and eat a lot of seafood. So it was a good week.
Wonderful.
But turning to gardening, it is amazing when you leave the garden for a week at this time of year, and you come back to something that looks like almost a different garden. Rapid growth happening right now.
Along with the weeds.
Yeah, the weeds are happy too. But
not when you're a straw bale or a container gardener. I had no weeds to deal with, just plants that were twice as big as when I left. So I'm having a good time out there tending my tomatoes and eggplants and peppers and beans and the perennial flower bed, which we have so densely packed, the weeds can't grow in it. We just have lots of color everywhere.
Well, let me ask about straw bale gardening.
Yeah.
How do you stake them, Craig?
Well, we're on our lawn. That's the septic field. So we have some room to bang in a stake. So the way I'm growing my tomatoes this year, very, very different. Last year I had 70 plants. This year I've got 16, and one plant per straw bale, and I've got 2 8-foot stakes, and I've left 3 suckers. So I'm going to take 2 stems up one stake, 2 stems up the other stake, use a lot of twine, and I'll end up with 6 7-foot plants. Hopefully get 30 or 40 pounds of tomatoes off each plant. But I've started my weekly Instagram Lives Fridays at 4, and I'm just doing demos and taking people through my gardening week by week so people get to see kind of a snapshot of how things are growing and the different things I'm doing.
Now, what is your website? Give us your website and what time you do those, and if they're available after the fact.
Sure. Well, it's the Instagram handle at NC Tomato Man, and they're not viewable from the website. They're only viewable from the Instagram app.
Okay.
They end up being what's called reels. And if you look at my reel tab, I've got 4.5 years worth of me doing these every week throughout the whole garden.
That's a lot of information.
So, Well, it's a lot of boredom if people.
Not if you're interested in tomatoes and gardening. It's not.
Well, and the dogs are running around and jumping on me and barking.
Yeah.
And
well, that's kind of the way this show is. We have the dogs running around barking and all the ambiance that goes with it.
You know, I enjoyed your chat about hydrangeas because we've got one in the corner here that was clearly planted years ago, and it's one of the French ones. Yeah. Ours goes a surprising shade of blue, but if you pick them at the right time, they dry really well and they fade to a really nice color and keep that color. But the use of shrubs, spireas, camellias, viburnum, as you mentioned, just a wonderful way. We've got lots of different shrubs in our yard, and they do enhance the color of the yard very much, along with the perennials that we grow.
Yeah. We got about a minute or so before a quick newscast, but if you can give some tips real quickly for people just starting out with this tomato business.
Yeah, yeah. Care for them. Take a look at them every day. Look at what they're doing. Look at the leaf color. Look for the spots. Feed them regularly. Water them regularly. But tomatoes are one of those crops you just don't plant and then, go on vacation, although we just did, but my daughter took care of them. They're one of those plants that really repay regular care, unlike things like beans or squash, where you can pretty much just plant them and pick them when they're ripe. Tomatoes are more of a passion and a hobby, a true hobby, than just a crop you forget about.
And the smaller the pot, the more watering.
Well, the smaller the pot and the bigger the plant, really the more watering. You almost have to treat it like hydroponics because those roots, those big plants use up the water really, really quickly. So tomatoes in containers are perfect for setting up drip irrigation or a drip hose or a soaker hose on a timer so that you don't spend your whole time with a hose in your hand.
Right. Craig, I promise we'll be back. And we'll talk more about tomatoes in the next half hour here on WPTF's Great. Weekend Gardener. We're back on WPTF, The Weekend Gardener. Mike Raley here, along with Rufus Edmonston and Paul McKenzie, who's retired now from the Extension Service, and Craig LaHoulier, who is with us from the Hendersonville area. Used to be in Raleigh, worked in Research Triangle area. And what was your official title? I'm sure with a big company out there.
Well, GlaxoSmithKline, started as a chemist and then was a project manager, but I'd rather leave that all deeply buried in the memory banks because I feel like my life began when I left the corporate world. I'm having such a blast now.
Well, I say that, Craig, about the political world. Absolutely. Freedom. Free at last. Not Martin Luther King. Free at last. Praise God, free at last.
That's the speech that I yelled to the heavens when I left the door the day they said goodbye, Craig. That's how I said goodbye to them.
Craig, I'm holding this up, my phone up. I was looking at the photo of first of you and your wife hiking, but also your garden, straw bale garden.
Oh, wow. Right in the middle of the yard.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got...
It looks like a little soldiers out there.
And you got all kinds of, it's not just tomatoes. You have, what all do you have out there? You've mentioned it before.
Yeah. So we have one straw bale with two eggplants, one with two peppers, one hot, one sweet, one with three types of cucumbers, four pushed together, and one squash plant in each, and four pushed together with three rows of bush beans. And man, straw bales for snap beans, the bush types, work so incredibly well. But the key is spacing the bales so that you can mow between and get your string trimmer to keep them looking nice. And we have three dogs that every year they go, Craig set up our obstacle course. And they tear through it. They play hide and seek. they never bump into a straw bale, and they never bother the tomatoes. So we've got the best rescue dogs, man. They just have such fun with that that array of bales out there.
What was your rationale for converting to the straw bale gardening versus, didn't you used to kind of do conventional gardening?
So I started with conventional gardening in Raleigh, and then loblollies and poplars have this habit of growing tall fast. So we had to move to the driveway where the sun was shining, and that led me to container gardening. And then when Story asked me to write a book on straw bale gardening, I said, well, I have to give it a try, and I've fallen in love with it. And where that picture shows is our septic field. So there is really no way here for us to do an in-ground garden.
Right.
We would construct raised beds, but then it would be the cost of filling those up. So for a $6 straw bale, you get really great performance for that season. And then at the end of the year, you pick them up carefully and throw them in a pile, and it turns into black gold, the most beautiful mulch that I actually fill containers with it and grow potatoes and get these really big yields of queen potatoes. So, it's also for those getting old like me, being able to sit in a chair and pick beans or work your tomato plants where they're raised up a foot or so. You know, it's a technique that if you like it, you will love it. But a lot of people find out it's just not for them. So it's just another tool to add into your gardening tool belt, along with containers, raised beds, and standard gardens.
But there is a process to it. It's not just, you know, you bring a bale of straw home from the hardware store or whatever, the nursery, and stick your plants in. There is a process to it. And did you say you wrote a book about it?
Yeah.
Yes. So
growing vegetables and straw bales, and it's a very simple 2-week process of regular applications of high nitrogen with daily watering, followed by a standard food application. So I go with a 2805 every other day, about a half a cup per bale, and then you switch to a cup of 10-10-10, one application. 2 weeks from the time you start it, you can plant it. And if you put a 3-inch layer of potting mix on the top, that's where you can direct seed into it. The heat being generated by the composting going on at the center of the bale raised the temperature. So when you direct seed squash or beans, I end up picking the first produce out of it in about 40 to 45 days from seeding, which really pushes the maturity date by about 2 weeks, which is really nice if you want to, you know, overload your neighbors with summer squash and things like that.
Any tips for where to get straw bales?
Well, and here's the tricky thing. The only thing that can squander the straw bale experience is if you somehow are unlucky enough to get one that has persistent herbicides embedded into the straw.
Well, that's...
Much bigger problem with hay than straw.
Right.
Yeah. I've used 400 straw bales in my years of bale gardening, and I've only had two that actually killed my plants, and that came out of one of the big box store type things. So if you stick to a local garden center, smaller places, I know that I think it was Campbell Road Nursery they sold really high quality straw bales. We have a little place here down the road called Briggs that just, and, you know, they're interesting. They throw out mushrooms for a few weeks, and they turn into chia pets as the wheatgrass starts to germinate, which our dogs love to eat, actually. I think it's a great thing to try with kids to get them interested in gardening because of all the different steps you use to prepare them that they can learn about. And they'll be at eye level watching the plants grow, which is really nice as well.
Well, Craig, let me tell you about a little experiment that I did about 15 years ago.
Sure.
I think it's back when people were trying to keep weeds down by coming with the black covering, black plastic.
Yep.
So I said, okay, I'm going to do tomato gardening and not stake them. Mm-hmm. Well, they went crazy, but on a hot day, it halfway boiled my tomatoes.
Yeah.
Did you ever try that?
growing tomatoes on the ground actually works best up north where they have winter. You know, the hard winters will kill off a lot of the diseases that are in the ground. It's a bit more problematic down here just because we have such a high occurrence. You know, we have Septoria leaf spot, we have early blight, we have Fusarium wilt. And the slugs get them and the critters get them. And if they're touching the ground, they can rot because I think if it's raining, they'll be sitting in a puddle of water. So, you know, put 100 gardeners in a room, 100 farmers in a room, and ask them how they handle their tomatoes, and you're going to get 100 different answers. Are they stakers? Are they cagers? Are they sprawlers? Do they do a Florida weave? Do they do a Japanese tomato ring? And, you know, one of the wonderful things about gardening to me is if you've got something that works great, stay with it.
Well, here's an ex-sprawler. One year tried on black plastic.
Yeah, yeah.
That's enough.
Yeah, but you had immediate sauce, right?
It produced beautifully.
Yeah.
And then some of these other things occurred.
You know, we have a strawberry farm down the road from us. We've had a lot of heavy rain, and he opened his farm, and wherever the strawberries were on his black plastic, they had a rotten spot on them. So heavy rain in the spring for certain growers is really tough if you're growing your own crops. Yeah.
Yeah, I've always heard that farmers can usually deal with drought better than they can torrential rains because they can't get into the fields with all that rain for one thing.
Yeah, and you know that's another real advantage of straw bale or container gardening because you're growing in something that can drain. So the plants have all the water they use, but anything that's excess will just come out the bottom. Whereas if you're in a really rainy spot and your garden is low-lying and it doesn't drain well, you can run into real problems. So I've actually been a much more successful gardener here in North Carolina growing my crops in straw bales or containers, whereas when I gardened in Pennsylvania, where you could stick your hand in the ground 3 feet and not hit a rock, you know, the drainage was great, and I could do in-ground gardening very successful there. So I think you mentioned a really good point about doing a soil test. Learn about your soil. Learn about how it perks. All of those things are really important factors into having a good experience with your gardening.
Well, Craig, you mentioned a point earlier, and I think it's worth repeating that there is a difference between straw and hay.
Yeah.
And, of course, if you go to a nursery, you know, or a garden center or whatever, they're going to sell you straw. Mm-hmm. But if you're buying something, you know, you live near a farmer or whatever, you need to make sure you know the difference. And there is a risk with hay that you can get those persistent herbicides that can cause all kinds of problems. So make sure you get the right thing.
And the other risk with hay, I've never used a hay bale to grow in, is think about how fast, if you mow your lawn and put the lawn in a pile, how fast it composts down to nothing. So straw is mostly cellulose. It's very stiff, and you can get through a whole growing season, and it retains quite a bit of its integrity, where if you were to go with a hay bale, you would probably get a month into the season. If it's really hot and wet, you may be looking at a pancake's worth of depth.
Yeah, there's a big difference, and people think they're the same thing. Mm-hmm. They're actually not.
Yeah, and even
tell people, go ahead.
Oh, and even if you're using it as a mulch, you can run into that problem with using hay that's been treated with the persistent herbicides that can cause big problems for you.
You know, not a funny story, but one of my seedling customers a few years ago came and said, your plants just haven't done well for me. You know, we planted them, we got them in the garden, and then we mulched them. And I said, well, what did you mulch them with? Well, our grass clippings.
Oh,
and
right.
I said, do you treat your lawn? I said, well,
yeah.
And so people need to make that connection that everything they're putting around their plants has to be free of things like herbicides. Mm-hmm. And it can drift in. A neighbor can spray their lawn on a breezy day, and all of a sudden your tomato plants, the tops are curling up, and they've got the herbicide damage. So, it's good to know what your neighbor's gardening philosophies are and what they're doing at the moment, because your plants can suffer from something that they're doing, and they're not even thinking about it. It doesn't even occur to them.
All right, Craig, I've got to know the question, the answer.
Yeah.
Do you have clover in your yard?
Our lawn is clover, creeping Charlie.
There you go.
Yeah,
you're my man.
I got the same thing. I gave up a long time ago because I have so many plants in my yard and so much shade. I can't grow grass very easily.
But you know, when you mow it, it looks gorgeous.
Yeah,
it's green and it looks uniform. Hendersonville, well, Rufus, you'll know about this. You know, having familiarity with up here, we throw plants out and they thrive. So, unlike Raleigh, where we killed 90% of the perennials we put into our gardens, we can't kill anything here. It is like an agricultural mecca, and I think it's because we have very, very few 90-degree days. We have adequate rain, and we have nice breezes to keep the humidity down. So,
well, I have this theory about the mountains up there in Boone.
Yeah, yeah.
Plants have gotten only so many months to thrive in, and they give it their best. It's like Alaska. I have never seen such incredible, incredible plants as I saw in my last visit to Alaska.
Huh.
And like outside of Boone, my mama's dahlias were 2 feet taller. In fact, I stripped what do you call that thing on your shoulder one time with a sledgehammer driving stakes in the ground for those dahlias.
Yeah.
They were so tall, and I think the plant gets an urge there to look. I've only got so much time, about a month less, than I do down in Raleigh area, so I'm going to give it all I got.
Also, they're happy.
My mother-in-law, my wife grew up in Iowa, and my mother-in-law is a amazing gardener, and you know they've got black soil that's like 200 feet deep. I mean, I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, she drops a seed in the ground, and I mean, and then she has to stand back, and get out of the way.
Yeah, it really is something. And so I know that I've got to dash off in about 10. So, but I just wanted to give just a few tips. I think we're getting into, it's June 1st, right? I don't know how that can be. But
I know.
So people's tomatoes are going to be really cranking now, and I think the best two things they can do is examine that foliage, and if you see grayish blemishes with a bullseye appearance, that's early blight, get those leaves off the plant. If they see lower foliage with brown speckles with yellow zones about it, that septoria leaf spot, get those leaves off the plant. And then walk out into your garden midday when it's its hottest. And if your plant is visibly wilting, they're not getting enough water. And I think if you just do those things, look at your foliage and get the diseased leaves off and make sure they're sufficiently watered, you can have a really good, successful crop of tomatoes. You know, they're not the hardest thing to grow. They're not the easiest thing to grow, but I think they're one of the most fun things to grow because they keep you hopping all through the gardening season.
Yeah, they bring so much pleasure if you get some real fruit.
Also, Craig, I find that everybody plants their tomatoes just as soon as the last frost date. They all come in around July.
Yeah.
I have learned as time goes on, I'm planting some 3-inch plants now because I know that'll come in August. And I might even get another one. People want to grow. That's why they got to give away everything they've got and zucchini and all the stuff you're talking about because they're planting only in this one planting a year. Successive plantings of things, including tomatoes.
Yeah, I call it the terror of the harvest because you're dying for fresh produce. All of a sudden, you've got a fridge full of zucchini, cucumbers, tablesfuls of tomatoes, and then you're stressed out because you don't know what to do with all the things. So I think succession planting is a wonderful idea. But, you know, gardeners really get enticed. I want the earliest this.
Oh,
I want the biggest that. And
well, we have a contest going on at my rehab for my little heart valve and who can get the first tomato. And I'm I'm intent on winning it.
You know, it's funny. I've decided long ago I'm not a competitive gardener. Joyce Blazich, a friend of ours, used to display at the Harvest Festival when they had all the pretty pepper plants. She's like, "Why aren't you bringing your stuff down there to show? It's gorgeous." It's like I really winning something or competing in something. That's not why I garden. I garden for me and my wife, and to learn stuff, and to share what I learn with other gardeners, so that I can help them not make the same mistakes that I've made. Although you only learn with gardening when you do make mistakes. So it's just fascinating how this is my 40th year of being a gardener, and I'm no less excited now than I was 40 years ago about it.
Well, Craig, we need to get you on as soon as we can.
Sure.
And so we'll.
You guys are fun. You don't know how much I enjoy it.
Well, I am so glad you do, and I apologize for ignoring you there for about 15 minutes. It just you know,
he does it to me all the time, so don't worry, Craig.
Yeah, how could I do that? I mean, you're two great people and two smart people. I don't know.
Oh, I'm eminently ignorable. That's no problem.
I really didn't ignore you. I just. I don't know.
My wife of 44 years knows all about that. I am never at a loss for words, so she's found ways to tune me out.
Well, we were not trying to do that, believe me. So we need to get you on very, very soon. Give us again your website and also Instagram information.
Yep. All right. So if you have any questions at all about tomatoes or pretty much anything, because I grow everything, it's email is nctomatoman, all one word, at gmail.com. My website is craiglehullier.com, craiglehullier.com. And my Instagram handle is at nctomatoman. And I sit in my driveway 4 o'clock every Friday and spend 45 minutes doing a demo and then taking questions. And it's so cool because you get people coming in from England and Sweden and California and South America. I've learned that people everywhere love tomatoes.
Yeah.
And there's no shortage of questions that people have. So we have a blast. And if you don't catch it live, you can watch it after the fact.
How about that city in Italy where they blast one another with tomatoes?
Yeah,
I've always wanted to go watch that.
You want to participate?
Yeah, I want to do it. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, take out some anxiety.
My daughter went on a trip to attend that, and she said it was so gross.
Yeah, I mean, you know, is there enough water in the town for baths? Because that's the first thing. I'm very clean.
I thought about how they waste all those tomatoes.
Well,
so would you be in there picking them up, Rufus?
Yeah, I'm trying to make a mayo sandwich.
You know, the thing about produce is when it's fresh, it's so wonderful. And when it's going bad, it is so awful. I used to work in a grocery store in produce, and my job when I first started out was going through the 10-pound bags of potatoes and finding the bad ones.
Yeah.
Boy, that sounds familiar.
Nothing smells worse than a potato.
I know.
It's gone off. So anyway, that's an odd note to it.
That's okay. It's an odd note wherever we go on this show. But thank you so much, my friend. It is so nice having you on.
It's a pleasure. You know, farmers markets have opened here. So what I do is I have a chat with you guys, and then we're going to buzz right off to the market.
Good for you.
Strawberries and blueberries and things.
Well, we'll buzz right off and talk to the folks at this farmers market coming up soon.
Great. Well,
thank you, Craig.
I'll be in touch with you, Mike.
Please.
Another time soon.
Okay. Soon.
Thank you.
To you all.
Good talking to you, my friend. Craig LaHoulier with us from the Hendersonville area this morning. I didn't ask him what the temperature was up there.
And look for his books.
Epic Tomatoes and Planting Vegetables and Straw Bales or Straw Bale Gardening. I've got it. I'll find it and mention it. I've got a copy of it.
They're quite well done.
Oh, just, yeah. Wonderful books. Tom Campbell, our friend for so many years, I gave him a copy last year, and he bought copies for relatives and friends. He is a real Craig LaHoulier follower. And by the way, you can hear this information, Weekend Gardener podcast, a repeat of the show, basically, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. You know, wouldn't it be nice to see your garden flourishing, free from nibbled leaves and trampled flowers? With I Must Garden deer and rabbit repellents, you can make that dream a reality. I Must Garden repellents are made from natural ingredients, ensuring a safe and eco-friendly solution for your plants, the environment, and you. The repellents are gentle on your garden but tough on deer and rabbits, sending them elsewhere to eat. I Must Garden repellents are long-lasting, too. No more constantly reapplying after every rainfall or watering. I Must Garden provides protection that stands the test of time so you can spend more time enjoying your garden and less time worrying about critter invasions. They're available in ready-to-use sprays and cost-saving concentrates. There's even a granular animal repellent for deer, rabbits, and groundhogs. I Must Garden repellents are available at local centers and hardware stores all over the Triangle, including Homewood Nursery and Garden Center in Raleigh and Town and Country hardware stores. Protect your garden today with I Must Garden repellents. People, pet, and eco-friendly. I Must Garden, your ultimate defense against garden pests. We'll be back after the news here on WPTF's Weekend Gardener.